Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. By the way, all the indices very much in positive territory right now. The Dow's up over a half of 1%. The NASDAQ, again, record territory. It's up about a quarter of 1%. The S&P up about a quarter of 1%. So everything is positive. That's good. Let's hope it can hold. We will see. This is based on a new enthusiasm in reference to Jerome Powell. I'm just going to say Jerome Powell pretty much said that we're still going to cut rates the end of this month. I mean, it didn't really sound like, well, we might. It really wasn't that thing. He didn't leave much to the imagination. He didn't say it was a definite. He didn't come right out and say it, but certainly everything he said sure indicated that it was going to happen. So that's where we are with that. Also, there's going to be a press conference later on today, I believe, in reference to the census. And I know that Sam Case here in news has got a little bit of a report on what's going on with that. Let me go to Sam, and then we'll come back to right after that. So Sam, what do you have?
So the Trump administration is continuing to pursue efforts to include a citizenship question in the 2020 census, even after the Supreme Court struck down the original proposal. Just as Robert explained, the court required better, quote, explanation for agency action, and that the current reasoning was really, quote, more of a distraction. In response to the ruling, the Justice Department plans to ask the court for instructions, quote, to govern further proceedings in order to simplify and expedite the remaining litigation and provide clarity to the process going forward. In the meantime, President Trump is considering citing an executive order to have the question included, saying, quote, we're working on a lot of things, including an executive order, end quote. However, this may not really be possible considering the Constitution delegates responsibility of the census not to the president, but rather to Congress.
You know, that is one of those things that is going to escape an executive order, it sounds like. And I know that, you know, the government, which I really fault the Justice Department, wants to switch lawyers on this because they know they didn't make a strong enough case for it. And I think that's all they would have needed to do, but missed that opportunity. They want to go back and do that. And so far, that's being shot down. So that's interesting. But, you know, it's what is really interesting. I watched, I think it was, I want to say it was Monday night. Maybe it was Sunday night. I saw interviews being done on the street in reference to the census. Every single person asked said when the question was, do you think that when we count how many people live, work in America, it should be legal citizens of America? And everybody said yes. Nobody said no. I think we're missing in the debate the notion that how can we have a census of how many American people we have here in America if we're not counting all those people? I mean, if we're counting, yes, all those people, but we're adding on another 2 million of illegal immigrants. I heard this morning, as they're talking about the immigration department, saying there's going to be a sweep of people starting next week and deported that have overstayed. All of these are people that have court orders to leave. And they're going to start rounding them up. So, of course, the left is saying, well, we can't do that. It's unconstitutional. I know they want open borders. They haven't even looked at the news and what has gone on in the Eurozone. Oh, they all loved open borders too, the notions of open borders, until it actually happened. Now, there are countries, guess what they're doing? They're building walls. Unbelievable. Not to mention, when will someone stand up and say, we in America, America cannot afford? There's nothing wrong. There's no shame in that. I mean, there's shame in we have been spending like mad for years and years, and there's shame in that, spending without any accountability, without any thought process whatsoever. So now we're looking at $21 trillion in debt soon. And what happens with open borders is it's going to exacerbate government expenditures to the point where you and I won't be able to get health care. That's one of the problems they're having in the Eurozone. No doctors, no nurses. I'm going to be in the same boat. But it's going to create an environment of debt that is going to be insurmountable. We're almost there now. And nobody is talking about the national debt. We're going to talk about it at the bottom of this hour with the Heritage Foundation. So we are going to talk with them, and a guy by the name of Robin Simcox, who wrote a great article that spurred me to say, you know, we need to check this out. He is a Margaret Thatcher fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he wrote a great article in reference to this, and we're going to talk to him about the impact of open borders. All right, we've got our Ag Report coming up right now. Ag very much in focus still. And here's Craig Halgert with our Ag Report. We'll be right back after that.
This is Craig Halgert with your Financial Issues Ag Update. The July USDA Supply and Demand Report will be released at high noon Eastern Time today. And that report always holds the potential for a market-jarring surprise. So today could be very interesting. Now, yesterday we saw corn trade both sides, and it ended up a little higher after it gained some strength from a warmer and drier forecast. Now, heading into today's report, I'm seeing that the trade guesses for harvested acres are running anywhere from 76.2 to 84.3 million acres, while the national average yield for corn estimates are running anywhere from 162 to 167 bushels per acre. With that wide a range, there's certainly opportunity for surprises and major market moves when that report comes out today. Now, soybeans were higher again yesterday as they continue to have support from technicals as well as positive trade talks between the U.S. and China. China is still expected to proceed with some goodwill purchases of soybeans during the talks this week. Heading into today's report, the trade is expecting the USDA to give us an average yield of 48.5 bushels per acre, which would be down a bushel per acre from the June report. Wheat managed to post a little stronger close yesterday. From a fundamental news standpoint, it's kind of a mixed bag. In today's report, it's expected we'll see an increase in winter wheat production. However, with the good harvest progress that has been happening, some believe that the increase could be more than the trade is looking for. On the international front, look for the USDA to trim world wheat estimates since both the EU and Russia are expected to have lower production this year. Cotton futures posted a higher close on Wednesday, with December futures ending up 54 points higher to close at 63.82. Livestock futures were split for the day, with cattle lower and hogs higher. August live cattle futures were 50 cents lower for the day, while August feeder cattle futures finished 54.5 cents lower for the session. Lean hog futures had another strong session, with August closing up $2.65 for the day. Class 3 milk futures were a touch softer, with August futures ending down 4 points to settle at $17.76. In cash markets, choice beef boxes were 31 cents lower as they settled at $214.42, while selects were $1.20 lower for the day as they closed out at $190.89. In hogs, the pork carcass values finished $2.17 lower as they ended the session at $71.60 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Halgert with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
We are going to go to phones. Before we do that, I just want to remind you at 10:30, we've got Robin Simcox with us. And Robin has written many commentaries for every major newspaper. You may recognize him from Fox News or CNBC or Bloomberg, all the major networks. He is a Margaret Thatcher fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He wrote a great article called Open Borders Mean Closed Opportunities for National Prosperity. It's a great article. And I will make sure that that article is in my newsletter this week so that you can click on the link there in the newsletter and read the article. So I'll make sure of that so that you can check it out. But it's a very interesting article. And I felt it necessary or desirable to bring Robin on the air so that we can talk a little bit about open borders, since that is going to be one of the major topics in the upcoming presidential election. There's no doubt about it. And somehow the left has managed to frame open borders as a good thing. All right. Well, we'll talk about that. All right. Meantime, I'm going to go to phones. We'll be with that interview here at the bottom of the hour. Let me go to Sharon. Sharon's calling us from Texas. Hey, Sharon.
Can you hear me, Dan?
Yes, I have you.
Oh, good, good. I have a question because I possibly did something wrong. When we sold the issue where they had the fire in a company in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
With some of the proceeds of that sale, I bought 200 of E52, which I didn't realize until it was too late, is an MLP, and I bought it in my IRA. Should I sell that, or is it okay to have 200 shares of an MLP in an IRA?
No, it is fine. I wouldn't worry about it. It's an American MLP. It's the biggest position I have in my IRA, as a matter of fact, that company. It's a very strong company, pays very good dividend. There may be some tax consequences, but nothing too dramatic. This is a company that's up about 30%, now maybe not 30, 25% on the year. It's done very, very well. It's had a great run. Pays a 5.75%, 6% dividend. It's very well valued. It's a great company. I wouldn't hesitate at all. That's not a problem.
So there's no tax filing if you have an MLP in an IRA?
It depends on the way the MLP is structured. If I'm not mistaken, because I file so many of those personally with my IRA, those K-1s for the MLPs, but I can't remember whether this is one of them or not. I don't pay a lot of attention to because I don't care that much, but I am not sure, but I don't believe so. But I'm sure somebody will probably call as you continue to listen and say, oh, no, I own it. I had to or I didn't. But I don't remember. I file too many of them. But I wouldn't be concerned if there is. The trade-off for the high income, not to mention the potential growth, which is not the reason that I put that on there. This is an income stock. It's for people looking for income more than it is for growth. So I don't put it on there for growth. The growth happens to be a side benefit of owning this company.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, Sharon. Thank you. Bye-bye. God bless you. Great stuff. By the way, folks, that was, if you are a partner, I have a conference call today at 1 o'clock Eastern Time, 12 o'clock Central Time. So I hope you're going to be on it. If you're not on it, that's fine. It's not a big deal. But if you are a partner, it's one of those must-listen-to conference calls. I am going to begin to give you some information on what is shaping our strategy moving forward. I want to talk to you a little bit about that strategy moving forward. I want to give you a feel for where I am coming from, the thought process, and the analytical process of where I'm coming from to all of you that are partners. So if you are a partner, you don't have to be on the conference call today. We'll probably, you know, have 900,000 people on it, give or take, somewhere in that range. Because we record those, they will be, that recording will be placed up on the partner side of the website for those partner conference calls. So when you get home today from work or over the weekend even, you will have time to listen to that. There's not going to be anything in this conference call that I am going to feel extremely necessary that you act upon today. If there was, I would put an alert out to that. So, but I just want to help you understand some of my insights as to what I am looking at and thinking about as we move forward and where we are right now compared to where we were just in the last conference call last month. I would also suspect that if you're a partner, that there will be other partner calls next week or the week after. Now, we got some things behind us. We have a decision for all practical purposes on the Fed. We know pretty much, we can feel fairly confident as to what's going to happen with rates at the end of this month. We are seeing things in trade begin to shape up. We have some optimistic showings along the areas of trade, not just with China, but with other areas of the world. I'm not saying there is, it's still not surrounded by some clouds of uncertainty. It is. As far as the markets go, we have some certainty about what the markets are going to react upon. And we also have, I believe, from my perspective, some certainty about the economy. Now, y'all know I care far more about the economy than I do the markets. The markets are irrelevant because a good, healthy market like the first, the last 2 years minus the last 6 months, so the year and a half before the last 6 months, we had a market driven by economic fundamentals. It's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it's always been. That's what we like to have on a consistent basis. We don't want a market driven by false positives about a narrative of what might or could happen. We want it to be driven based on the fundamentals of the economy and what is going on in good, solid, foundational economics. That's what we want the market to be driven upon. That's the way it's supposed to work. But unfortunately, we have a market that is being driven by central banks around the globe, by geopolitical events around the globe, by trade and the uncertainty of trade around the globe. We have markets that are hanging on those things. What we need is a market that is hanging on one thing, and that is the underlying fundamentals of the economy. Of course, our market has to be well aware of the economic situation and growth around the globe, which is deteriorating, in my opinion, in dramatic fashion. I believe that we are seeing, you know, everything that is going on right now with Deutsche Bank in Germany and how that's impacting the economy. I talked about a year and a half ago, if you remember, how annoyed I was that no one was talking about it. I was trying to prepare you for that which was coming. And I knew it was coming. It was a given. but we chose to ignore it, or at least some of the markets chose to ignore it. They can't ignore it now. There's a lot of things going to be happening in and around that. That impacts our economy, not just our market. Forget about the markets. It impacts our economy. The financial sector is about 27% of our economy. We've got to be concerned about that. We are not disconnected from Deutsche Bank any more than we're disconnected from a lot of other major banks. So we've got to watch those things closely, but what we want to watch are the underlying fundamentals. That's what we care about more than anything, and the uncertainty in and around geopolitical events, the uncertainty in and around trade, the uncertainty in and around global growth. Why is it slowing, and is it all because of trade, meaning that if there is certainty now back into trade, does that mean they are going to recover quickly? Well, it should mean that if that's the problem, but it's not going to happen that way. So all of those things we're looking at, and that's what we're going to be talking about on our conference call. So if you are a partner, please listen to the conference call. You don't have to be on it live. It'll be recorded, and you can hear it anytime between now and the end of the weekend. We'll probably take it down on Monday. All right. Folks, we have a great interview coming up. I'm excited about Robin Simcox. He is with the Heritage Foundation. He is a Margaret Thatcher fellow with the Heritage Foundation, the Heritage Foundation's Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom. And he is a fellow with them where he specializes in counterterrorism and national security. And he wrote a wonderful article about open borders means closed opportunities for national prosperity. And no one should know that better than the Eurozone, right? Or do they? Some of the questions I want to ask him. It is a great article. I am going to include in my newsletter tomorrow a link to this article. So that link will be there. I'll have the headline like I normally do of the article, and you'll see the link there. You can click on it and read that article. But we're going to have Robin Simcox with us from the Heritage Foundation right after this short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It is great to be here. And as I mentioned to you earlier, we have a one of the fellows from the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom with the Heritage Foundation. And Robin Simcox wrote an incredible article, very good article. I really found it interesting. Maybe it's because of it was right in my wheelhouse, but open borders mean closed opportunities for national prosperity. Robin's been in America now for about 3 years and lived through a lot of the open border issues in the Eurozone. Robin, welcome.
Thank you.
Robin, I appreciate so much the article and some of the things you pointed out. Just the title of the article, Closed Opportunities for National Prosperity. And, you know, we love immigration, legal immigration here in America. All four of my grandparents, my father as well, they were immigrants. And we still have that same welcoming, I hope, of legal immigration. I believe from an economic perspective, we need legal immigration, particularly when we see an unemployment rate as low as it is. We need it even more. But we don't need open borders. And how much does open borders for not only the present, but for the future, impact the national prosperity and national security, for that matter?
Well, yeah, I think that I think that's exactly right. And the thing is, this position that not just the U.S., but any country really welcomes legal immigration, but there has to be some controls. You have to have an idea about who is in your country legally and who isn't, I think is a very mainstream position that has only become in any way contentious in the past couple of years, as I think primarily the Democrat Party have moved increasingly to the left on this issue. And obviously this is something in Europe we saw in 2015, especially when Chancellor Merkel in Germany opened Germany's borders to let in essentially anyone who could make their way to Germany. And over 1 million people came in 2015 alone. The German authorities had no idea who these people were. They still don't in many cases. And they also knew that once they were in, it was going to be very, very impossible, if there were any security threats there, to get them out. And we've seen that happen in Germany. We've seen it happen in other parts of Europe. And it's, I think, pretty basic common sense stuff, this, right? That you have to have controls over who comes in and out of your country, and you have to know who is living in your country or who isn't. Mm. But it's somehow become a contested issue in recent years.
Why is it we can't look at and what the unintended consequence of that? Obviously, Angela Merkel wasn't able to see some of the logical, and unintended consequence of that, how it was going to impact, obviously, national prosperity, but how it was going to impact the healthcare system, for instance, and so many other things that we're concerned about here. What were some of those, and still are, some of those unintended consequences? And are they ever going to get better, or is it going to continue for years and years to come?
Well, I think that one of the unintended consequences was that if we look at the German example, if we stay with Germany, was the, and I keep a database on the terrorism threat picture in Europe and have been for many years now. And what you saw happening in Germany after this influx of people was a significant uptick in the terrorism threat, a significant uptick in terrorism plots, specifically terrorism plots being perpetrated by people that came with that initial refugee flow. So Germany, it very much impacted their security. There's been a string of sexual assaults that have been linked to recently arrived asylum seekers from Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, it's the minority, but it's also. But you can't pretend this hasn't happened. These are real cases and very pressing issues for Germany to deal with. I think one of the reasons that this phenomenon has begun to develop, if we look at the case of Germany, there was something very appealing, I think, for Germany. For this, the imagery and the symbolism of refugees fleeing to Germany as opposed to away from Germany. I think that the weight of Germany's historical baggage played very heavily with it. And I think you see some of this in the American debate, where there are some politicians whose view of America and American history is so overwhelmingly negative and think that America is such a uniquely racist country that it has to somehow... it has to make up for past sins by now basically welcoming in anyone who can make it. And I think that's just not only a bad misreading of Americans' past, it also significantly damages the potentially America's future.
Mm. And it certainly has, and we have, the interesting part about it is now, we in America have some history to look at, very near history in Germany, the rest of the Eurozone. And we seem to have this unique, maybe not so unique, inability to be able to look at the example of what could happen, what can happen. And I suppose that we think we might be exempt from those kinds of situations. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Well, and this is a partially a good news story in that America has traditionally integrated waves of immigrants fantastically well.
Yes.
In a way that we in Europe have not. I mean, I think there's various reasons behind that, America can't adopt a policy. No country that wishes to remain a country in any identifiable way can adopt a policy of saying if you can make it here, you can live here. I mean, this idea that's being kicked around at the moment around free healthcare for all, for anyone who makes it to America illegally, I mean, who's expected to pay for all this? We know the answer. It's the American taxpayer. But that's a basic breakdown of the social contract. The reason why people pay taxes is not because they like paying taxes. Right. It's because, of course, they pay into the system and then they get something back in terms of government services. If you don't pay into the system, but you get the same services anyway, then that contract begins to break down.
Mm. And that's exactly what is going to happen here. We begin to lose our country as we lose our borders. And we are not in any financial position to be adding to that debt. And I think that we have an awful lot of problems in our healthcare system already. And this has to be very taxing on a healthcare system that could be, or at least predictions say, in 10 years here in America, we're going to have fewer doctors and nurses that it is going to be a huge problem for us to be able to service all of these immigrants.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to the requirement that, well, basically what's going to have to, if people are going to ask for increasing tax rises increasingly because there's going to be no way of funding this. I mean, it just gets back to me to a question about where America wants to go in the future as a nation. If it is going to allow, if the terms of the debate are going to be framed in a way that unless America is willing to accept absolutely everyone that wants to move to this country, it is an irredeemably amoral and racist state, then the country is on a terrible path. This is not a standard which other countries apply. It would be America. I mean, it's masochism, to be quite frank. And I still think that there are. My hope is that the majority of people in this country recognize that a completely open borders policy and something that's being advocated by some prominent Democrats is not something that's sustainable, because this is just 101 stuff.
Yeah,
but it seems to have landed strangely within a wing of the Democrat and progressive left.
Mm-hmm. And that is my hope too, that the majority of American people understand that. And is Europe, as an example, is it irreversible what they've done?
Well, this open borders, I mean, the European Union open borders policy that exists with over two dozen countries, it's very much changed the way. I mean, national sovereignty is nothing like as strong in Europe as it is in parts of the United States. And I think that there's been a whole host of disastrous things that have come alongside that. I mean, you've got parts of European countries that change overnight. The demographics change. The neighborhood changes. Eastern European countries are losing all of their middle class and socially mobile working class to much wealthier European nations, where they come and work for what is in, for example, Bulgaria or Poland, very little money, is a lot of money, but in Western Europe is below minimum wage, which of course then undercuts the wages of the building industry, for example, in the UK. British building companies can't compete because they're constantly undercut by those coming from Eastern European countries willing to do the work at a fraction of the price. I mean, this is a complicated thing to deal with and navigate, of course. But with no ability to control immigration, politicians can't really begin to wrestle with the issues because they can't control their own borders.
Right. Amen. And that's what's going to happen here if we're not careful. All the people that our hope rests in have to make sure that we rise up and state our views. Robin Simcox, Heritage Foundation. Open borders mean closed opportunities for national prosperity. Great article. It'll be in our newsletter this week. Robin, I sure appreciate it.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
You know, it's great to have a guest like that every once in a while that really understands both sides of it. And, you know, it's so, I don't know, I guess it isn't. I was going to say confusing. There's such logic in this whole situation in and around immigration and illegals and borders. It's so logical. And it can only mean when we have this left that cannot see the logic, it can only mean that there is an agenda far different than the reality of just people crossing the borders illegally. There has to be an agenda that goes way beyond the logic of this is not good for a nation. Now, you and I know what the logic is. These are not illegal immigrants. They are voters. They are voters. Illegal voters, but that doesn't matter. Voters. They are people that are changing congressional districts, maybe. That's what this is about. It's about putting on a face of socialism and we're welcoming everybody. Not just those that are wanting more opportunity, but anybody for whatever they want, whatever their agenda is. And if you fail to see the logic that no borders means no country, if you fail to see that, if you can't see the financial logic that we are $21 trillion in debt and can't afford this continued debt without massive tax increases, if anybody voting can't see that, then maybe that's the problem. But the left is solely dependent upon the ill-informed people. See, without the ill-informed, they cannot win an election. And this will be adding to the ranks of the ill-informed. And all these people have to be informed about is you either vote for us or lose your benefits. What's it going to be? Take an hour out of your day, one day, to vote or lose your benefits. That's all the ill-informed need to understand, and they are going to vote for this. But what we have now is an entire Hispanic community that is one of the largest groups, segments of our population of growing Trump supporters. Because this is a population group that is here for prosperity. They're here for opportunity. They're here for the same reason that my ancestors came here, for more opportunity for their families. And they understand that they have no opportunity if they don't have a president that has a pro-growth agenda to create that opportunity. And they are becoming quickly the fastest growing voter bloc for President Trump. Could that maybe happen as well with all these illegal immigrants? What would that do? I believe that the Democratic Party, as we knew it, is gone. It's gone forever. I mean, it's gone. I mean, when you listen to what is going on, it's gone forever. But that doesn't mean it's not going to get reelected because they're depending upon the ill-informed. And I'll say this in a negative way. But the millennials themselves, the protesters that can't articulate why they're protesting. Come on. That's what we have. Let me tell you, I was in Washington, D.C. at this summit. Christians United for Israel, it's an amazing organization. And I'm so privileged to be a part of it. And I want all of you to be a part of it. CUFI.org. Check them out. You need to get involved. It went from 2013, 400 people, to 7 million, more than 7 million people. The power that is being gained of evangelical Christians, not only for the defense of Israel and to defeat anti-Semitism, but so many other issues that are important. And let me tell you, as I sound critical maybe of ill-informed millennials, you know what the most encouraging thing that my wife and I talked about on the way home that we saw, the most encouraging thing? How about 650 college students there cheering, representing over 300 colleges and universities with their CUFI chapter in their school. Over, I don't know, a couple hundred high school students there cheering. There were 7,000 people there. But to see the young people that were there was so encouraging. So there are plenty becoming informed. But nonetheless, it's the ill-informed that the left is operating with and on. All right, let me go to phones, go to Patty in Ohio. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning.
I tried to call last week, but there was a lot of problems, so I just decided to call this week instead.
Okay.
Mike, I have two questions. One is, we have an annuity that matured, and we just have it sitting in our savings account right now, and we kind of wanted your direction on maybe what we should do with that.
So, Patty, you already have accounts, I know, right? And,
yes.
And they're tracking with with the asset allocation models, I assume, right?
Yes. Yes.
Is this money in this annuity? Is it a? Did it come? Is it a qualified annuity, or is it IRA money?
No.
Okay.
It's not.
So, and you have? Do you have an investment account? I know you have.
Yes.
Okay. So, is that where it's sitting in the money market?
No, not right now. It's
okay.
Just sitting in a high yield savings account.
And is it in, do you guys, are you guys income minded in your investment strategy or still growth?
Well, we're kind of half and half.
Okay.
We do need the income. We are retired and, you know, we're looking for strong income, but we do like to look at the growth possibility also.
Okay. So I would take a look at building on the portion of your portfolio that is income. I would rather see you build upon the growth in income. You know, those things that are in blue and some of those things, the industrial stocks and the utility stocks primarily that do have growth opportunity will be volatile both up and down, but will likely be great growth stocks that do produce you know, an okay income as well. And I would like you to focus on that. I think that would be, I would really like you to focus on that. I wouldn't want you to focus strictly on growth, not at this point in our economy. And I'm thinking about 3 years out right now. So I would say I would want you to sit tight a little bit longer. You can get it ready to start investing. You can have it in your investment account, in that money market account, or leave it in your high yield and transfer it out later. But I would want you probably by October to be starting to wean in to some of these income producing stocks. And maybe over the next 4 or 5 months through October to maybe, you know, February, March, to have it all invested in some good income stocks. I think there's opportunities that are going to come about in September and October. with some of the good solid companies that I have on the list maybe dipping down a little bit. Now, having said that, I'm going to talk about this at the conference call today, but there's really no reason that I can find based on a number of issues that I'll talk about as to why the markets can't continue to go up from here. I know it almost seems impossible based on the first 6 months of the year, but there's really no reason why it couldn't happen. But I would rather play it very conservative and start to gradually look at some of those great solid growth and income stocks that may have taken a dip.
Okay. Okay, we can do that. So just kind of let it sit until October and then start putting it into some of these other income stocks or growth stocks.
Yes. Okay. And you know, maybe it could be September, but I would wait it out a little bit longer. And like I said, October is probably good. Would be a good time to start unless something dramatic changes. And what I mean by dramatic changing, what would change that, Patty, would be a fairly significant downtick in the indices, in the markets, where things are dropping. That would be a change. That might allow you to expedite a little bit, go a little faster and starting to get some of that invested.
Okay.
All right.
But I'll hold my next question to another day.
All right. Thank you, Patty. I sure appreciate you. God bless.
No problem.
All right.
Bye. God bless you soon.
Thank you. Folks, I know some of you got to leave us. We've got a great interview I've already talked about, The Long Goodbye. What an amazing documentary. We have the producers, directors here. I'm going to talk to them about that amazing documentary and get to more of your questions. We'll be back after this, but if you got to leave us, have a great day. God bless.
If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.